It is Football and Other F-Words, and we are having an issue on YouTube. So if you are hopefully on Twitter watching, if you are wondering why it's not on YouTube, for whatever reason, that it is not letting us stream to YouTube. If you want to reply, I think Twitter now lets you reply, so you may be able to talk to us from there. Let's see here. Check Tuesday, Tuesday. So I don't know. I don't know what Check Tuesday, Tuesday means, but maybe we are live on YouTube. I don't know. Either way, like on other F-words. Yeah. Well, either way, we're live on Twitter, on Facebook, and typically on YouTube. But either way, Bluegrass Beverages is our sponsor, as I got derailed by this weird error message that I keep getting on my computer over and over. Bluegrass Beverages is our sponsor. Over 50 years in business over at Hendersonville, Tennessee, off of Main Street. I'm going to switch this around so people can see our nice, beautiful logo over there in the top left corner. Either way, it's just not going to... Yeah, I know YouTube's not working. Everybody's just going to have to deal with it for now. I can't control it. I don't work for YouTube, nor do I work for StreamYard. So we'll just have to roll with it like that. Mike, finally on the show, we're a three-man crew. We have Stoney here, Mike at Mike Herndon NFL, who has an article over at podkarski.com talking about the top offensive tackles and putting them into tiers. He did not put grades on them because he's a coward, and grades matter more than tiers. But, you know, usual coward stuff for Mike, who is very, very obsessed with where kids go to high school and football players go to high school. And then
I think my tiers made it pretty clear where I stacked the guys up. So that's what matters. I'm not going to make up a number just to make up a number.
How close are they, Mike? But how close are they? That's what matters.
That's why you got to read.
So Bros Network, stackinginbox.com. Stoney has completed tape watch of 250 prospects that we are finishing up writing about, putting in and designing and putting into our draft guide that will hopefully be out at some point next week. And of course, podkarski.com tomorrow, where I will talk about who in the draft can wear green dots. And we'll talk a little bit about that today as we talk about our top positional needs. We're going to talk about the also kind of looking at, we're going to use something called the crystal ball method, which is used in business, kind of predicting choices of what happens in the future and how they could dictate choices today. I'll put out a better definition later. But guys, how are we doing? Mike, you just got finished eating a salad in front of both of us for 15 minutes. How was that delicious salad?
It was great. It was spinach and cranberry, delicious with some croutons in there. Top notch lunch salad. I really, really enjoyed it. As you guys probably were able to tell from my shoveling up it into my mouth.
And Stoney, we just got done listening to the presser. A lot of good answers to terribly asked and posed questions.
Yeah, I mean,
you are very excited to see the what articles are derived from this presser.
That's what I was going to say. Like, man, riveting stories are going to be coming out of this presser based on the questions that were being asked in this one. I can't wait. Also, I didn't eat a salad, but I had a handful of Sun Chips. I don't know. I've just got trash in my office right now. I'm running on coffee and gin, Sun Chips, and the sheer love of the game right now. That's no sleep till Detroit.
I've eaten nothing today. All I have had is a Celsius. So I am in desperate need of just hydration and nutrition and food in all phases of life. Guys, got your taxes done? Because it is tax deadline is Monday. Does everybody got their taxes done?
No. I've got them done. I just haven't filed them yet.
Yeah, we're finishing up those taxes today. I've had many stress pimples and zits pop up over the last few weeks. We're finishing those taxes today, which means that I'll be paying money today to the government. Yeah. Because the government hates everybody and they want your money. So, just because of how the government is. Fuck taxes. I hate taxes.
Tax day was way more fun when I worked for someone else.
Let's talk about some fun stuff. And let's talk about first, because I'm going to spring this up on you guys. Jim Nagy's about to come and kill me. The Titans 30 visits are currently at 16 of 30. And I will read those to you right now because we have Junior Colson, we know of, who may or may not be a top 30 visit. That's something that we are trying. We can't effort to figure it out because it's not something that we personally will know unless the Titans tell us. But we know that he is from Ravenwood because our high school football analyst, Mike Herndon, has told us as such. As the first things out of his mouth was like, oh, you went to Ravenwood, blah, 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 blah. Like, anybody fucking gives a shit.
I mean, Mid-State high school football's come a long way. You're sending kids to Michigan and places like that now. You had one of the top recruits in all of the sport for next year, I think. Isn't it George, what's his name? Godsey or something like that?
Sure, whatever.
Yeah. Tennessee football. Tennessee high school football coming up.
You are obsessed with high school kids. It's really weird. Okay, so 30 visits are at 16 of 30. Chris Abrams-Drain, Jarvis Brownlee Jr., McKinley Jackson, Marshawn Lloyd, Roman Wilson, Joe Alt, Rasheen Ali, Kalen Carson, Malik Nabers, J.C. Latham, Junior Colson, Tyler Guyton, Tavondre Sweat, Jalix Hunt, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Jordan Morgan. Malik Nabers has hit on combine and private meetings at Pro Day. They've had a local scheduled with Cole Spencer. And then we have virtual meetings with Darius Robinson and Josh Proctor. That is four cornerbacks, three defensive linemen, two running backs, two wide receivers, three offensive tackles, two offensive guards, one linebacker, two safeties, one edge. All that currently up to date. I look at this list and I see a lot of names that are a lot of theoretically day two guys. And my general feeling is that, man, this team really wants to trade back. What are your thoughts on your guys' overall thoughts on these 30 visits?
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Zach. I kind of feel like some of these names, the J.C. Latham, who might be in play right there around 10 or just outside the top 10, Tyler Guyton, Jordan Morgan, Kool-Aid McKinstry specifically. We talked about it yesterday, and I'm like, man, this sure – I don't know. Like, maybe they have all they need on guys like Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roma Dunze and Olu Fashanu, but – the fact that they're not in the fold right now, it's just coincidence, but I think at the very least you can say they are talking to a lot of guys that are going to be in play there in that late 20, early 30s range.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, some of the names are definitely interesting from that regard, but I do think that there's probably, I don't know, we don't know of what, almost half of them right now, assuming they're using all 30. So there could be some of those guys that are snuck in there and they're keeping it quiet either because that's who they really want to draft or, just because they want to kind of move in stealth a little bit there. And it's also possible they met with those guys at Pro Days or stuff like that. I would say, like, normally you'd say Combine and Senior Bowl, but Rand didn't go to either of those events this year. So, I'm a little surprised that they end up.
He went to the combine. He was at the combine. Well,
for like a day.
They could got of all.
He missed the interviews with the offensive linemen. I know that. So
you know that for a fact.
But anyway, he was not there for the offensive lineman interview day. I know that because that was the groundbreaking.
That doesn't mean he didn't meet with them. That just means he wasn't zoomed
in with them. Whatever.
That just means he wasn't in the press corps asking them questions. Like, what is this?
He zoomed into the meetings. He was not physically in Indianapolis. But anyways, my point is that, like, I don't know. I think sometimes the 30 lists are interesting because a lot of times you do see guys drafted off of those lists. But I don't know. I mean, they're obviously casting a pretty wide net too. So. Last year, did they have Skoronski in for 30 last year?
No. So that's the thing I was going to talk about. There is one top tackle that is currently absent from this list, and that would be Olu Fashanu currently. And I almost wonder if this isn't a Peter Skoronski thing where I think they're planning for the eventuality that for whatever reason, they believe the smoke that Joe Walt is going to the Chargers. So I think they're kind of convinced that that is has a really, really good chance of happening. So if that's the case, because based on this, if that's the case, they want to trade out. And if they can't trade out because it takes two to tango, then Malik Nabers is your guy. Like if I was putting in, and this all can change next week, it could change tomorrow, but if I was putting in bets, I'd be like, their preferred thing is Joe Walt, number seven, trade back. Then if they can't trade back, take Malik Nabers. And that's kind of where I'm at. So, you know, Peter Skoronski wasn't there last year. He didn't come through. They were at his pro day. I remember that. But I almost think that, like, we see that Olufe, we don't know how much of these top or the 30 visit strategy, Jim Nagy, the 30 visit strategy last year was Vrabel and how much was Rand Carthon. So we kind of will get a clearer picture this year of that. I know I wrote something last year for Stacking Inbox, and San Francisco had a really good hit rate off 30 visits that were eventually turned into draft picks. I don't know if that will be the case here, but I do think that, you know, Folu Fashanu never pops up on this list. It seems like a hidden guy that they're probably like, okay, that's our guy, but we're not going to let anybody know that's our real guy. Like, there's a chance. What do you think about that theory?
Could the Alt and Neighbor stuff also be a smokescreen? Like, hey, these are the guys that we're really sniffing around. So if you want one of these guys, you better trade up to get him to create some interest. I mean, I don't know. I'm just spitballing here on top of your theory, Zach.
What about you, Mike?
Are the fact that they're like giving the cold shoulder to Olu, are they telegraphing too much? Is that a smokescreen of a smokescreen? Yeah. That they're saying, you know, hey, we are not interested, but we are interested, but we're not, you know.
I got a smoke screen for you, Mike, and I've passed this along to Stoney in private text. But
wild. Yeah. I can't believe you're going to share this one on the air.
I'm going to put it on the air. I got a smoke screen of smoke screens of smoke screens. What if that they have been lying to us this whole time? And they view Peter Skoronski as a left tackle, and they are going to trade back and draft Troy Fatanu as a left guard, and they are going to draft then Mason McCormick. Is that the guy I'm remembering correctly? Mason McCormick at pick 38, mm-hmm. Who's going to be a right guard?
No, just loading up on the guards. Just a whole offensive line built out of guards.
You got the youngest offensive line out there. What do you think about that? What do you think about the idea that what if that is the smokescreen, though? What if they think that Skoronski's a left tackle?
Well, that would be quite the lie. Yeah, that would be quite the maneuver to purposely float that out there that, yeah, we think Skoronski's a guard. And for Brian Callahan to have had the forethought to go on a Bengals podcast a year ago before he even knew he was getting the Titans job and say that he thought Skoronski was a guard. That would be impressive subterfuge by Mr. Callahan.
I love it. I mean, it's chestnut checkers.
They're also hosting Jordan Morgan on a 30 visit, you know, similar build to Peter Skoronski. The arms are shorter. Like, what do you do with him? Are you going to slide him into left guard?
Big hands, Skoronski
out to left tackle. Is he going to be your left tackle? Like, I don't know. They're similar players. Maybe it could just be, hey, we want both of these guys. We're okay with the arm length issue.
Let me ask you a question before we move on to our next topic. But Daniel Frazier puts out here, the weirdest thing for me with the 30 visits is how many cornerbacks they've met with. So are you guys surprised? Because I think we've all kind of been of the assumption that they still need at least one more cornerback. And the guys that they have met with for the most part, except for Kool-Aid McKinstry, are considered fringe round three, round four guys. So it makes sense that they would look at these guys, talk to these guys. But also, if you're going to play the board, right? Roll the dice, play the board. It was the big thing. You can get those shirts, I think, over at... Do y'all have those shirts still?
SoberShop.com.
SoberShop.com. But you got to think that if they're there at 38 and Kool-Aid McKinstry is wildly enough still there, which he should not be, I mean, that is a first round cornerback. You would think they would take him because, I mean, you can't have enough cornerbacks in this league. So what do you guys think about them? Mike, what are your feelings on that?
Yeah, I think they do need another corner. Because for one, your fourth corner is going to play. Like, if you go through every NFL team's snap counts by the year, the fourth corner plays a lot of football, whether that's by injury, whether that's by sub package play, you know, anything could be happening there. And especially when you've got a team where Chidobe Awuzie has some injury past to his game, and he's also 29 years old. Legarius Sneed has the knee issue that you know, obviously has been part of his story this offseason. We don't know how serious that may or may not be. Obviously, you would hope it's not serious given the amount of money they gave him. But having an insurance policy that's better than Trey Avery or Caleb Farley, to me, is still an important thing. I think, you know, Kool-Aid McKintry at 38, that would be a little bit surprising, but if he's on the board, that's a huge value, right? So I think preparing yourself for the possibility that, hey, we could get maybe a top 20, top 25 player in this class at 38, you have to prepare yourself for that. And if he's by far the best player on the board, I think you go take him, even if, you know, you have other needs elsewhere. So I think it's interesting. I will say, I think Kalen Carson makes a ton of sense for this team, as like a early day three guy who matches the physical, you know, dog kind of skill set that they've accumulated with Sneed and Awuzie. So I think that makes more sense to me, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if they, you know, sprung a surprise if there was a big time corner left at 38 that they loved.
Yeah.
Stoney, let me ask you a question because I want to get to another position and everything, the running backs, because a lot of people, I know that when we are talking about our positional needs, Mike has it ranked at zero, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to go back and check. Very, very
chestnut,
low.
Chestnut head.
Yeah. Yeah. You're ridiculous. Anyway, they're obviously bringing in a couple of running backs to kick the tires on. Probably Rasheen Ali's a little bit more of a medical check. But I look at it from the fact that Brian Callahan told everybody at the combine that you have to have multiple different running backs to fill multiple different roles. And we have talked that it makes sense. I don't necessarily agree with that, but we have talked how similar Tyjae Spears and Tony Pollard are. So they're kind of bringing in guys that are a little bit thicker, a little bit bigger, a little bit more maybe between the tackles, maybe kind of guys, which makes sense if you're looking for a guy that can complement those two running backs. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, adding a third guy into this rotation is, you know, it's not a dire need by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's a great year in the draft to go value shopping at running back. Like, you're going to be able to pick up a guy that fits that mold in the bargain bin, whether it's a guy like Rasheen Ali, who I think is a pretty dynamic running back, like good between the tackles, but man, he's got some acceleration when he can get into the open field. We've talked about Isaac Garrido before. I think Tyrone Tracy Jr. out of Purdue fits that mold as well. Really tough in between the tackle runners. Even if you wait and you get a guy like Kamani Vidal out of Troy, not the biggest guy, but he's a really powerful guy, kind of wiggles through the line of scrimmage, great as a pass catcher. Like, this is just, it's kind of like the icing on the cake. If you get one of these guys day three, or even as an undrafted free agent, I'm still not panicking about the Imani Bailey RAS. I still love him. I'm still in love with Imani Bailey out of TCU. So he's likely undrafted free agent candidate, but I think that all of these guys that they're looking at can do a little bit of everything, which is something that Brian Callahan has said in press conferences that he covets, with the added dimension that they seem to be really sniffing around the guys that are tough in between the tackle runners. So I think it's a nice compliment for the offense. It's only going to make it deeper, only going to make it better.
I wouldn't personally spend anything before like round six pick on a running back to me in this.
I think that's kind of where that running back class kind of is going to be anyway. I think your high end guys are obviously going to go second round somewhere, third round.
I think Garrido ends up in like,
I think the bulk of this class is like fifth and sixth rounders. I don't feel like there's a lot of high quality guys anyway. And I would agree with your assessment on that. So I'm kind of, I don't know if I really want to broach this subject, but he was asked about it today. Cause I talked about this on a football show on Monday about how most these, I got a couple of different things like floating around about these big boards and opinions on big boards and stuff like that. Like the stuff that leaks from the media, like, come on guys, the stuff that leaks from the media is the stuff that these teams already know. And let me say this. I look at the Malik Nabers stuff, not the stuff about what happened in Louisiana with the gun charges and stuff that were dismissed and throughout. But like, okay, he may be wide receiver one, okay, and then people jump on that and say, well, this is like his agent, you know, getting this out there and blah blah blah. For who? We're not the ones drafting. Like, hello, this is information. Like, this is information. We're not the ones making the decisions to draft. If you went around the league and said, Brian, just want to let you know that the Bears have Malik Nabers as number one. Okay. Like, that's just kind of like how it's going to be, because that's how the NFL works. Everybody's board is different. Nobody's board is the same. But that brings me to Tavondre Sweat, who Dane Brugler, the Beast, puts in the fourth round. Now, people have latched on to the words, and Marcus Mosher was the one I saw on Twitter put it out there. The immature class clown kind of deal, party animal and class clown, but does not put any of the context around it, which context is very important. And of course, this is on the heels of the DWI arrest that we know very little of. Now we know since Monday that it was happened at 4:30 a.m., which nothing good happens after 2 a.m. And B, we really need to start this like NFL only players decision kind of deal. Like, they message us and we tell them, no, please do not do this. Please get a Lyft. Please get an Uber. Do not have weed in your car and like stuff like that. They really need to have like those kinds of apps and stuff. But also we know that someone hit him and they fled the scene. So it'll be interesting to see what more information comes out. But Brian Callahan, noted spring break partier, by the way, because that's how he met. That's how he met Zach Taylor, Nick Holtz, and all these other guys that he's pals with. What's the guy from that does the air raid offense that's now the Commanders OC?
Cliff Kingsbury.
He's part of that group too. Yeah, Kingsbury. It's Kingsbury, Press Taylor, Zach Taylor, Nick Holtz, all spring breakers back in 2004. So, in saying that, as a person that's been in many spring breaks, he's being a little open-minded, and he even says that every situation is a little bit different. We have to find out. Now, and Braden said this, not one situation does not make a man. And so I say all this to say, Mike, how excited would you be if, for whatever reason, I don't think this is very feasible, because the top 100 big board on average by Dane Brugler over the last 5 years, 20 of them are wrong. 20 of them are not going in the top 100. And I think Tavondre Sweat's one of those 20. But how excited would you be if Tavondre Sweat, for whatever crazy reason, falls down to the fourth round and is drafted by the Tennessee Titans? We're going to go Mike first, since you are wearing your Longhorns hat, and then we'll go to Stoney after that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be thrilled, obviously. I think he's a very talented player. I think some of that stuff, you know, with him in the past, and I don't know anything about the DWI situation, won't comment on that. Obviously, if that was a decision he made, it was a poor one. But the character stuff, I think from what I know of Texas, which is a good bit, and I, you know, read all the boards, talk to all the you know, people over there. He was liked within that Texas team, and it's not like he was an issue for them. Now, he did improve, I think, some of his work habits and things like that as he went on in his Texas career, but by his junior year, he was behind Keandre Coburn, who ended up getting drafted, I believe, by the Chiefs, and I can't remember what the other defensive tackle was now, but he and Murphy were kind of like the third and fourth defensive tackles for that group. and you could kind of tell Sweat was the better, the best of that group by his junior year, even though he wasn't seeing the field as much. And so immediately when he took over that defense, really is like the primary guy up front, he was a huge step forward for them in the middle. And so, like, I think his talent sometimes gets undersold just because people see the weight and they assume things about him that aren't necessarily true. Very talented guy, obviously massively powerful, but does a lot of other stuff too. And his impact on that Texas defense cannot be understated. Cannot be overstated, I should say. He was a monster for them. And then if you could get him anywhere close to 106, that would be a massive steal for the Titans or anybody.
Can I say something real quick? Because I want you to have your say too, Study. But something that was funny in the Brugler, the Beast, talking about Tavondre Sweat, that is kind of like the big narrative around him is that, you know, he's a fat guy, but apparently coaches said, or scouts said, that he played at Texas during this year at 380 something pounds, but he played the most snaps on that defensive line, including the most pass rush snaps, more than Byron Murphy.
Yeah.
Just want to throw that out there. If he was playing 380 there and he's playing 366 now, my conditioning concerns aren't really there. Like, I don't know how you can – I don't know how scouts can say, well, I'm worried about 380 pounds, but then turn around and in that same breath say, well, he played a lot of snaps. He played the most snaps on the defensive line. Well, there's no conditioning issue. Just, you know, he's just an eater.
Yeah.
Throw me in it. What's wrong with eating?
I would pile onto this conversation by reminding our viewers and listeners that not all pass rush is created equally as well. Mm-hmm. Because people see the size, they see the frame, they see him backing down Bo Limmer at the Senior Bowl, and they're like, oh, this dude's powerful, he's big, you know, gap stuffing run defender, and that's about it. But if you can stand there and just punch a guard's shoulder out of place and get them out of angle, and a lane opens up right in front of you to get to the quarterback, that's still pass rush. If you are backing down linemen, collapsing the pocket and forcing an early throw, that is still pass rush. You know, it's not like he's out there with his long arm bending around the edge, sinking his hips and getting by these athletic tackles, but he's still out there creating a pass rush. Mike, I'm curious your take on that, because I think you probably watched a lot more of him than I did, but do you feel like he's a little more versatile than people are giving him credit for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's got really good quickness in short areas. I mean, like, he's not going to sprint down the line and chase down a running back or anything like that, which, like, Byron Murphy, I think, will show you at times. But Sweat in a short area in a phone booth, which is where he's going to work anyways, is super quick. And his hands are really good. They're very fast. I almost think sometimes his size plays to his advantage in the fact that his opponents just don't expect him to be that quick when they see him. You know, he looks like a guy that can't move, and then all of a sudden he's hit you with a little club swim and he's by you, you know. And he's really good with that kind of thing. And I do think he was less of a two gap, just kind of hold the point guy, than he was a disruptor. He was in the backfield. He played in a penetrating attacking style. Not just a guy that was just holding up in the middle of a defense, like old school, you know, I don't know, Michael Pierce, for example, from like current players. Like, Michael Pierce, very much a hold up two gap guy, valuable, but not a disruptor. Sweat can disrupt. He can do a lot of that stuff too. So I think he is undersold in that regard.
Yeah, I'm with it. So I'm part of the dipshit media that would have been okay with him at 38, because I think the impact he has on this defensive line could be exponential. And, you know, I'm not just sweeping the DWI stuff under the rug or anything, but out of that came all this, like, oh, well, yeah, the teams already thought he was a partier. There were already character concerns. I mean, this is stuff that it sounds to me like the NFL in general was aware of to begin with. And I don't know if maybe that stuff's just now trickling out to the media, and that's why you're seeing Sweat come down on all these big boards and mock drafts. But I still think the tape is the tape. And if, you get to know this guy throughout the process and you're comfortable with drafting him wherever you need to draft him, I'm cool with it.
Hey, that's what Brian Callahan said. Tape is the tape.
Yeah.
The athletic testing and the lack of athletic testing doesn't bother him. They want to bring these guys in, check some medicals, do the routine medical thing, and find out the kind of person that they are. So they don't care about your athletic testing, JC Latham. So just make sure that you guys change your boards appropriately or change your outlooks on this draft and your opinions on this draft, because the Tennessee Titans are telling you what they look for in these prospects. So speaking of which, we thought it would be a good little exercise to kind of look at the position. We put in our votes on a scale from 0 to 10. 0 is not needed, 5 is somewhat needed, and 10 is like very needed. And we went in and we put in our votes for the positions on the football field. And I will share those for you guys right now if you're watching. And so tackle and inside linebacker both got voted perfect 10s across the board. From us. Then next is edge is the third most important right there, a little bit over between 8 and 9. Defensive line after that, which we have separated out, nose tackle. So defensive line, wide receiver after defensive line, then safety, cornerback, nose tackle, guard, tight end, kicker, running back, and center. And then we have quarterback, punter, and long snapper, not as positions of need. So I thought it would be nice. I think we're going to have the same kind of tackle prospects across the board. I think we're all, are we all 1, 2, 3 in some order, Alt, Olu, and Latham? I would view that Stoney would be the one that would have someone different.
I've got Fuanga at 3. Ahead of Latham, but hey, they're all like razor thin. Like, choose your flavor out of any of these 4 guys.
So yeah. I think you go read Mike's article. You can also read the stuff the Stoney has written at stackandinbox.com, and that will be at the draft guide. So I don't think that we really need to get too far into the weeds on tackle, but let's talk about linebacker. That's something that I'm writing about tomorrow, and I have 3 guys. They're not my quote unquote top 3. Okay. But they are the 3 guys that if the Tennessee Titans walked away with one of these guys, they have their green dot linebacker of the future, and they have a day 1, year 1, week 1 starter. And that is Junior Colson. And then I would go Jordan McGee. And then I would go Edofon Uliofoshio as my number 3. Now, that does not mean they're the 3 most talented linebackers. Does not mean they are the 3 best linebackers if you were to rank them on a big board. But all 3 of those guys, Junior Colson being number 1, all 3 the other 2 guys rank in the top 10 on Dane Brugler's positional big board. But to me, I am in love with Jordan McGee. I'll say it. I don't care who hears it. I am in love with Jordan McGee. He does everything at a high level. He is so, so good. He's so athletic. He had a 4.16 short shuttle time, which is the fastest out of all the linebackers by a wide margin. He's so fast, so nimble. He's quick to diagnose. I love Edofon's, like, just kind of like experience. He's a good pass rusher, too. He's pretty versatile. But Junior Colson, and obviously the 30 visit tells us a lot. And I'm for PK, I'm like at 700 words already just on Junior Colson. And I have like 4 linebackers I want to write about. But what I like about Junior Colson is, and we haven't really mentioned this anywhere, so I'm going to mention it here first, even though it was going to be mentioned at PK.com first. I'll mention it here first. He's got experience in the Mike McDonald system. What they run at Michigan, that pro-style system, and the way they use their linebackers, he's got experience in a Mike McDonald system, the same system that Denard Wilson just came from. Not saying that they're going to run that same system, but you talk about a guy that hits the experience, the pro-style experience button, marks that off the box. He marks off the leadership. That's something, you know, team captain, voted in defensive MVP for the best defense in the nation. And he's consistently reliable. Now, listen, he's not the most powerful of all the linebackers. He's not the fastest of all the linebackers. But I think he has the perfect blend of, like, the instincts, the mental and physical part of the game. He's kind of like, he's like the, I wrote in here, he's like the Joe Walt for me. He's the Joe Walt of linebackers. He's a very, very clean prospect that has a high floor, and he's very safe. The problem is the Titans, without trading back, can, I don't think they could take him at 38. I'm not going to be upset, but that's just kind of where I'm at.
I'm right there with you, Zach. I kind of feel like 38 is too rich for Colson. My criticisms of his game were like power, crashing the line of scrimmage. I didn't feel like he was particularly impactful in blowing up plays. I still like Peyton Wilson as linebacker one in this class, but the medicals are a huge concern. So I think the conversation for those two guys, and it doesn't seem like the Titans are really sniffing around Peyton Wilson right now. I wonder if the medicals will be a hold up for him, but I think between those two guys, I think those are the two that have the best chance of being like week one impact guys for this team.
Yeah. And I'm with you guys both on Colson. I have Colson as my top linebacker in the class. I also loved the tidbit from the Beast on him this morning, him playing with broken bones in both of his hands at very different points this season, playing with casts, never coming off the field. And his quote was, you know, unless I cannot physically move, I'm going to be out there. So it's, I think you can check toughness and all of that off the list for him for sure. The other guys I like at this position, I'm a big Jeremiah Trotter Jr. fan, from Clemson. Like, there's some physical limitations, the short arms. He's not like super explosive or rangy, but he's just a smart guy, knows where to be, super productive. I think he's the kind of guy that you could step in and like immediately play middle linebacker for you next year, wear the green dot, do all those things. I mean, obviously son of a highly successful NFL player too. So he's been kind of raised, you know, like Joe Alt in that, you know, this is how you do it. You've been coached by an NFL player literally your whole life. So there's just something that gets baked into those guys to some degree. And I think Trotter fits that. So he's pretty high on my list. I think I've got him actually as my second inside linebacker. And then I like Jordan McGee as kind of a later round guy. I'm like Trevin Wallace curious. But I think he's too much like Kenneth Murray, you know, to me, like he's a Will linebacker, not a Mike. So that's kind of a fit problem for me if they're viewing Murray as a, you know, long-term piece here. So, yeah, that's kind of how I see that group. But it's not a deep group to me. Like, I'm not that interested in many linebackers.
I write about this again, Paul. I'm doing a lot of spoilers for PaulKarski.com, but hopefully you guys have subscribed. But me and Stoney have talked about this, Mike, you know, but we have talked about it from the offensive line, me and you, Mike, about how like Jalen Duncan's a good example. It feels like a guy with all the traits in the world, but was never coached up at Maryland. Like, and it feels like these linebackers that are coming in have all the traits in the world, but they're just like throwing them out there and saying, okay, I think you're going to do this and maybe you'll do that. And like the on-field production for some of these guys, there's a lot of this is a very physically gifted linebacker class, both in length and size and also athletic ability. But I feel like it's a class that is lacking in ball production and on-field production. And I think that Frank Bush is going to have his work cut out for him. In other words, like the linebackers in this draft class, in this whole thing, the work's cut out for him. And that's kind of how I feel about this class. I want to ask you, Mike, about Edgerrin Cooper just real quick. We are put your bias aside for Texas Longhorns and Texas A&M. Me and Stoney aren't big fans or aren't as high in on him as other people are. Yeah. Where are you at with Edgerrin Cooper from? The traits are there, but I feel like you talked about Trevin Wallace being like Kenneth Murray. I think Edgerrin Cooper, we have never seen Edgerrin Cooper and Kenneth Murray in the same place. So I'm not too sure that they aren't the same.
I think I like him more than you guys probably, because I've got him as linebacker three behind Trotter, and it's like real close for me with Trotter. And it to me, it completely depends on what flavor you want, right? Like, do you want the guy who's kind of like not got all the physical boxes checked, but mentally, you know, it's there and you know what he's going to bring to the table. If you like that, then you like Trotter. If you want the guy that has 34 inch arms and runs a 4.5 flat, Cooper is your guy. And look, Cooper made a lot of plays too, right? I mean, he was a playmaker. He makes plays in coverage. I think he's got good instincts as a zone defender. And he's obviously got range. So I think there's things to like there, but you know, I think maybe part of it's too, he's playing for DJ Durkin, right? Like, I mean, he's probably not the most disciplined guy, right? I mean, so right. I think part of that is like, do you want to draft a guy with traits and think that maybe he'll thrive under Frank Bush with better coaching, a more disciplined system, a better defensive line in front of him, although A&M had a pretty damn good defensive line too. And see what that looks like. I am higher, I think, on Cooper than what you guys sound like you are.
I'd be okay in a trade back scenario if that's kind of where I'm at with all these linebackers, right? Like, all these linebackers are like, who's on the board and what pick are you on the clock? That's kind of how I feel about all these linebackers. So I could be talked into and forgetting that he looks like a guy that is just directionless, has no clue what the hell he's supposed to do but I think that's why you have coaches. And that's what Denard Wilson said today, right? Like, Denard Wilson said, we're going to find out what you do. We're going to put you in a position to do it, but we're going to coach before we figure that out. We are going to coach you. We are going to develop you. Today is your opportunity. The opportunity is here. So
let me also say that with all
this. Yeah, go ahead.
One more thing to get a quick dig in on A&M, but two, just because I do think it's relevant. A&M signed that number one class, right? A couple years ago or whatever, all the NIL money stuff and everything like that. They hired a bunch of mercenaries and it showed the way that they played defense. Like, those guys were out for themselves. They were out to make plays for themselves. So I could understand Edgerrin Cooper, even if he is maybe, you know, not showing it on tape that he knows what he's doing. It may just be because everyone around him is just doing whatever they want and he's trying to read his keys, and like, all of a sudden the defensive tackle's in a gap he's not supposed to be in and he's trying to make up for it or fix it, you know? So like, I do think that there's some of that stuff that could be happening. And that's why, you know, talking to these guys, the scouts being embedded with the coaching staffs and things like that, is so important, because you've got to be able to get that information that you're not necessarily going to be able to just tell purely from watching the tape. So I think there's some context there that to me gives me a little bit more of a lenient grade with Edgerrin Cooper.
Stoney, the floor is yours. We're moving to Edge. The floor is yours. You have, give us your elevator pitch on why Dallas Turner at 7 is the best pick to make at 7 and why it should be the pick the Tennessee Titans make.
Well, because the edge is a huge need for this team. They need somebody to run along with Harold Landry, but they need somebody that complements him well. They need a guy that is, you know, has a little more speed, a little more move to his game. And I think Dallas Turner is that guy. I also think when you're looking at the value, comparing the other needs of this team, offensive tackle, wide receiver, defensive line, there are quality options on day 2, day 3 for all of those positions, but I do not particularly like this edge group. I think once you get through Turner, Latu, Robinson, and Verse, I think they're, and Braswell, I'll put Braswell in that level too. Once you get through those guys, there's a significant drop off. And if this is a position where you're looking at this rebuild as a multi-year process, go ahead and get what I would say is the blue chip pass rusher, because you ain't going to get the depth in this class and you can still recoup some of those other needs like tackle, like wide receiver, with quality options that will start, that will play at the NFL level. It makes all the sense in the world to me how you can fit Dallas Turner at 7 into this team's narrative for 2024. Thank you.
I like it. Mike, there, Dallas Turner is there at 7. Joe Alt is there at 7. Malik Nabers is there at 7. And they draft Dallas Turner. Your reaction is?
I'd be frustrated. I'm not going to lie. I do understand the point. Like, I think edge is clearly a premium position. I am a member of the offense matters most always club. So I'd prefer the offensive players, especially if I think they're all blue chips in that group, that specific three-man group you just gave us. I think they're all blue chips. So if I'm deciding between a blue chip on one of the premium positions on offense or one of the premium positions on defense, I'm going with offense, especially because you can make the same point about there not being depth beyond like that first round for tackle. Because I don't think as deep as this class is at tackle, I mean, we're hearing stuff like Patrick Paul might go in the first round and things like that, which is crazy to me because I think he's a project. But that could be like 8 or 9 tackles deep. And by the time you get to 38, you ain't getting anybody that's stepping in and starting day one, right? And that's where I still have a little bit of a problem with their approach in free agency of just not signing any tackles. Because you've got to have a starter out of this group, right? I mean, whoever they draft at tackle is going to have to start. Because they just don't have other options on the roster. And they've kind of pigeonholed themselves as much as, you know, Brian Callahan wanted to say today that they haven't. I think they have at that specific position anyways.
Okay, would you guys rather, I'm going to give my answer too, have Darius Robinson at pick 38 or Jalix Hunt on day 3, wherever he may go? Now, for those that may not know who Jalix Hunt is, first off, you need to go listen to the OTP podcast from around the Senior Bowl. It is a fantastic interview with Jalix Hunt, second only to Max Melton in terms of what I really like about him. Coach Mack is in love with Jalix Hunt. Loves everything about him. It reminds him of, I can't remember which play. I think he wanted to say reminded him of Keith Bullock.
Keith Bullock. If I'm not mistaken. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jalix Hunt is an outside linebacker. He had 37 pressures, 8 sacks his last year, because I don't know if it's really his senior year. But he's a guy that has length, athletic ability. He has not played against the best of competition. But he is someone that I feel like he's better than Rashad Weaver. But I really love Darius Robinson and the flexibility they provide you. I think Darius Robinson does need a little work. He's a little bit heavier, a little bit less athletic than a guy like Chris Braswell, who we're all three really high on. Where are you guys at in looking at if, you know, whoever's on the board is on the board, but Darius Robinson, pick 38, Jalix Hunt on day 3 at some point. And that being the only investment that you have in edge. We'll start with Stone.
I'm going with Robinson at 38. I think he's a proven guy. I think he's still going to come in pretty early on in his career and contribute. I think Jalix Hunt is a project. I think he needs a lot of time, man. Watching him at the Senior Bowl drills, just throwing his body at offensive tackles with like virtually no plan, no real robust pass rush toolkit. The physical traits are there. I think he's just a guy you've got to develop. It might take a couple years before you start seeing dividends off that investment. It kind of reminds me of like the naked oiled up guy from Family Guy, just running around like crazy. You can't like corral him, you know, but that's not refined technique or anything like that, that it takes to win in the NFL. So I don't really think they're in a position to invest in a project like that. If that's the only edge help they add in the draft, I would much rather have Darius Robinson at 38, but if I may be so bold, why not both? Give me Robinson at 38, Jalix Hunt on day 3, and we're cooking, boys.
Dallas Turner at 7. Dallas Turner 7, Darius Robinson at 38, and day 3,
Can I say real quick that the magic has worn off my Puka Nacua projection from a year ago? We're off to a different draft cycle, obviously, but if I can hit Dallas Turner at 7, it's going to buy me a whole nother year of me being a wizard.
It's true.
Mike,
true.
Your thoughts on the scenario laid out?
I would side with Stoney there as far as I'm going Robinson. He's safer. I think you can play him right away. I'd say maybe Jalix Hunt has a higher ceiling, as far as what he can be, just because of the physical traits. And Robinson is never going to be a guy that's just got like great movement skills. Like, he's always going to be a power player first. But I think he's a guy that to me fits awesome across from Harold Landry, because you can play him as kind of like that elephant end and let him just wreck shop as a early down edge, you know, crusher. And then also let him come inside and push the pocket next to Jeffrey Simmons, like Danico Autry did really earlier in his Titans tenure before he became more of a dedicated edge rusher this past year. But yeah, I think the Autry comps for him make a ton of sense. He is like an Autry clone. And we've seen how effective that can be. So to me, I'm very much on board with Darius Robinson at pick 38 if he's on the board. Honestly, he may be my favorite pick at 38 if he's on the board.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Okay, let's close this show out. We're going to talk about the crystal ball method. And so the crystal ball method of business planning is using a crystal ball is a process by which you paint a vivid picture of what the business environment will be 3 to 5 years from now. Okay, so that is to help you inform decisions of today by looking at outcomes in the future. We know, based on their interviews with both on OTP, press conferences, and all this stuff, the Tennessee Titans, specifically Chad Brinker, Brian Callahan, and Rink Carthon, have all said that they have plans in place 2 to 3 years down the road. They have the vision in place. They have this. They have that. They have the strategies going. We saw in free agency, they had multi-layered ways of attacking free agency. And they were able to do stuff on the fly and change and do what they need to. So I ask you guys, if the Titans are trending towards not a top 10 pick, like we all, I think, kind of believe that it'd be something went awry if the Tennessee Titans were picking in the top 10 next year. And if they're trending towards not being a top 10 pick in 2025, how much does that weigh into the wide receiver versus offensive tackle debate in 2024 if they're picking top 15 or later in the first round in 2025? Because obviously this is a deep tackle class, so there is a deep wide receiver class, and if they're not going to be in this position next year, how does that inform your decision and how to attack the number 7 pick or the strategy in the first round overall? Start with you, Stoney.
Yeah, I think if 2025 comes into the equation at all, it is to say we're not going to be in a position to pick a receiver of this caliber in the future. I think you peek ahead to next year's class, and there's Luther Burden III, Emeka Egbuka, and then I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's April. There's a whole season left to be played, but on the surface right now, I don't see a Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, or Malik Nabers in next year's class. Offensive tackle, I think, is a little deeper. So if you're sliding down into the 15 to 25 range, somewhere around in there, well, I hope they're picking 25th next year. I think you can still get a quality guy, but paired with the idea that you could probably get quality guys at each position this year too, in terms of team building, like adding quality bodies there, I just don't think the generational tackle is there this year or next year. And so if you are kind of looking at this from, you're broadening your scope, and it is more like 3-year plan than it is when now, whatever it takes to get to the Super Bowl this year, I think that's going to lend itself towards taking one of the wide receivers, because the way the board looks like it's going to fall right now with those top 6 picks, it looks like one of those guys is going to be there for the taking at 7.
Mike, what does it do for you? Because you look at the offensive tackle class, like Kelvin Banks, left tackle out of Texas. Josh Simmons is over at Ohio State. You have the bookend tackles from LSU, Will Campbell. You look at some of these guys, and I don't think any of them have even the pedigree of even your – they all feel like a bunch of longer maybe Tyler, it's like somewhere between a Tyler Guyton and a Talisi Fuaga. Like, that's kind of it feels like right now you have a bunch of guys that, yeah, they're first round picks, but they're not Olu Fashanu pass blockers. They're not Joe Alt clean prospect floors. So where does that rate? Because, I mean, you talk about the wide receivers. I mean, they have a wide receiver on this list that I've watched a lot of Jacob Cowing. I couldn't tell you anything about Chitoria McMillan, but he is apparently the number two wide receiver in next year's class over Mika Buka, which is wild to me that that is even possible. But where are you at and how you approach this class? Because obviously teams do look at next year's class prospects in some way when factoring in their decisions here. But how much does it affect your 2024 if all things are equal? Does it make all things equal?
I think it's an interesting thing to think about because I think if you look at the track record of wide receivers, picking elite guys outside of the, say, the top 15 or top 16 picks in the draft, top half of the first round, you know, wide receiver, you can find guys in that range pretty frequently that are going to turn out to be elite. It's harder to find tackles. It's harder to find edge rushers because the guys with the traits at those positions just do not last. You know, the guys with the special traits do not fall out of the top of the first round. And it's just kind of like they're just unicorns. There's just only so many of those body types on the planet. And then to have those body types combined with actual football skill sets, it's just such a rare combination that it just doesn't, that the dominoes or the you know, tumblers don't line up very often for that skill set to fall. So looking ahead to next year, I think there's some wide receivers that will probably emerge. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if like Evan Stewart kills it at Oregon and, you know, some of these other guys, you know, like Isaiah Bond at Texas. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a big year, you know, with Quinn Ewers and everybody down there. So I think there's some guys that will emerge between now and then, and we'll be talking about that. You know, Berrion Brown at Kentucky. I think he could be a first round pick next year. So I think there's going to be some guys that emerge at wide receiver tackle. You know, I think there's some guys there. I think it's going to be a decent tackle class, but you know, it's going to be hard. It's really hard to project because you know, so much changes. Think about what we might've had at our big boards looking like a year ago. You know, Talese Fuaga-Vonga was not on anybody's radar coming into this year, I don't feel like, or at least not at the level of like top 15 pick. And he played his way onto it. And so do a lot of these guys. So, yeah, I think it's hard to project, but it's something they've got to keep in mind because those are using premium assets at premium positions is a key part of building this thing sustainably. And also, I think you have to look at it as like, and I talk about this all the time, but we get so focused, laser focused on like, how does a guy fit into the 2024 Titans when they have to be looking at it as how does this guy fit into the 2024, 2025, 2026, 2027 Titans, right? Like those like down the road years are probably even more important than this year because, you know, usually a guy isn't going to be elite as a rookie, but he might be elite in a couple of years. So where do you want your elite guys to be? Do you want them to be at left tackle? Do you want them to be at wide receiver? Because a lot of the guys that are currently on the roster won't be here in 2026, 2027, when those guys are in their prime. So you've kind of got to separate some of that too out of the mix when you're talking about drafting at an elite level, at least in my opinion.
Well, You guys have made compelling cases, and I agree with your mindset. But we're also all three guys that are kind of like, okay, this tackle class is very close. So with this tackle class being very close to each other in terms of the prospects that are really right there, you even Mike have gone on a limb to say that Marius Mims, if only he could stay healthy, which is a big red flag, you know, in my head. Especially coming from the Tennessee Titans history at left tackle. Does that change? After talking through all of that, does that change your opinion on, okay, Alt's there at seven, you have to take Alt because of what the class looks like next year? Does it, like, talking through all that, are you guys, does that change your mind any? Because you guys kind of made cases that, specifically you, Mike, made a good case. It has to be Alt because you can't find an Alt in the second round, but you can find someone like a Malik Nabers in the second round. Maybe Aroma Dunze would be a better comparison to use, but that's kind of what you made the case for just now. I just wonder, does that change, talking through that, change anything for you?
I don't know. To some degree, maybe. I guess I'm also not completely convinced that they won't be drafting in the top 10 next year. And that's not to say they're going to be terrible, but you know, if Levis isn't what everyone hopes that he is, then this team could absolutely be one of the top 10 picks in next year's draft. If he is still a problem,
right?
Right. You're probably looking at a quarterback in a bad quarterback class, which is tough too. So, Shadur Sanders, Quinn Ewers. Yeah. Let me show my unbiasedness right now. I'm not a big Quinn Ewers NFL projection guy. I don't think he's going to be a good pro. I think he's a good college quarterback, not a good pro. I don't know. I think you've got to take the best player available to some degree, but you do have to factor in positional availability into that equation too. So I think in an ideal world, you do come away with a tackle because they're just so rare to find at a really high level. And this class does offer a lot of options, a lot of flavors that whatever flavor you happen to want at tackle, you can get one in the top of this class. So I don't know. In an ideal world, I think they'd take a tackle, but I also wouldn't pass on a guy that I felt like was a Hall of Fame receiver if I felt like the tackles were just good, you know, and not elite.
What about you? After hearing what Mike said, after your whole spiel, does that change anything about what the Titans, in your mind, need or have to do at 7, Stoney?
Not necessarily, and it's just the caliber of these three wide receivers specifically. And that here and now, having the chance to get one of those guys. Let me play devil's advocate for a moment here. Are we sure?
Listen, you got a hard out coming up. I'm trying to get us out of here. So you
okay? You're right.
It's on you. It's on you. If you're
fair
late.
Enough. Are we sure? Are we absolutely 100% rock solid sure that Joe Alt is that type of left tackle prospect?
I'm not 1,000%.
Here's where I'm at. I think Mike, you may have said this. He's B pluses across the board, where yes. Other guys may be A's, but also have other traits that are F's. Like that's kind of to me, it's like, yes, Alt is my clear number one. And someone asked me this today, like, why do you think his ceiling is so low? And I'm just like, I look at it this way. If you ask me to rank these left tackles based on pass protection, Olufashanu would be number one. And to me, it's really hard for me not to have Olufashanu as my OT1 because that's how close I have him, because I just don't give a shit about run blocking. I just don't. I'm sorry. I just don't care. I don't care anything about the run game anymore. I'm out on the run game. So to me, I feel Olufashanu has a better chance at being Trent Williams than Joe Alt does. And if you could tell me that we get Jake Matthews, who is a perennial starter and he's really good, great left tackle, I'm not going to be upset. I'm not going to be mad. But I also at the same time can recognize, I think Olufashanu and even J.C. Latham, if you can rein in some of J.C. Latham's power and utilize it properly, which is the whole point of having Bill Callahan. I don't know. I feel the all-pro ceiling is there for those guys. Multi-time all-pro guys, whereas for Alt, you may get in a down year. He may get an all-pro mention. He may be second team. Like, I just don't feel like there's a lot to – he's so good at everything in his game. I don't know what you develop to make his game better.
Yeah. And that's exactly where I'm at with him.
Yeah.
He's good at everything already, and he's so technically refined, and it's like – all right, Callahan, what's he going to fix that's going to bring his game up to another level, which is already really good. So if he just performs at this level for the Titans or whoever drafts him, you're going to be happy with that, but you might not be getting Laremy Tunsil or Trent Williams, right? And I think I actually like Laremy Tunsil as the Olufashanu comp a good bit, because I think just the rare movement skills, the rare feet And I know like the athletic testing wasn't like all that great or whatever with him, but all you have to do is turn on the tape and like you immediately see how he's able to just like, he's just so nimble.
JC Latham has elite power. Yeah. Alt has elite nothing. Like, I don't think there's anything really elite to his game.
There's not a calling card. Like, he doesn't have like the, oh, well, this is what Alt's superpower is. His superpower is just being super consistent and technically refined, which is great. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but you know, there's just not that like special elite physical trait that you can hang your hat on and say, this is why he'll end up being like one of the best in the game. Which is hard. Yeah.
So I still, just to be clear, I still would prefer that the Titans draft Joe Alt at 7 overall.
Yeah, yes, I would
but
too.
For the sake of this conversation, I would put it like this. I think you are far more likely to get a player closer to the caliber of Joe Alt later in the first round than you would be to get the caliber of player that Adunze Harrison or Neighbors are later in the first round. Agreed. I think that's what totally it boils down to me.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting to close this out. Bluegrass Beverages is our sponsor. Forgot to put back up our image here. But Bluegrass Beverages is our sponsor here on Football and Other F-Words. Greatly appreciate them. I don't know how many tickets are left to the two-night event. You can buy tickets for $40 for Thursday, night one. Ed Lees is going to cater that. We'll also have unlimited drinks as well. And then the next night, Lachlan Table and a bourbon tasting with limited access for $100. That is going to save you that's like 100% saving or 200% savings. Or whatever. I don't know what I'm saying now. It would cost you $200 or more to get what you're getting for $100. I will put it that way in Nashville, Tennessee. So it's a 3-course meal from Lachlan Table, which is insane. It's going to be really cool. So make sure you go buy that. Today at the presser, I thought was interesting was that Brian Callahan was asked about the wide receiver room. No mention of Treylon Burks, which is not that interesting because, I mean, why should anybody mention him until you can prove otherwise? But his focus was on the slot. And I have said for a while that I think that Malik Neighbors is the guy that the Tennessee Titans are really zoned in on, even before all the visits and everything like that. Malik Neighbors is a guy that can go on and be a wrecking ball in the slot for you this year, then move on the outside later. He's a versatile piece. It's Malik Neighbors is wide receiver one B on their board, right? Like, I don't know if the Rome Odunze's dream is completely dead, but it sure feels like Malik Neighbors is the wide receiver that they are zoned in on. Mike, your thoughts?
I agree, and I think it makes sense. Yeah, I think he is the most explosive player in this draft, and they want explosive playmakers. And I think they've been pretty consistent on verbalizing that. So he, to me, makes a ton of sense for this team specifically.
Stoney?
Yeah, I would agree, unfortunately. I'm a big Adunze guy. He's my favorite player in the draft. But I think in terms of what the Titans will look for, Neighbors has the traits, and also we're quick to cite Bill Callahan and Frank Bush when we're talking about positional coaches. Tyke Tolbert's a pretty damn good wide receiver coach in his own right, so I would be confident in him like I'd be confident in the other position group coaches to coach up Neighbors and teach him more of how to play wide receiver.
The mention of the slot just really hammered it home to me.
Yeah.
You add that to everything else that has been with this Tennessee Titans team since the inception of Brian Callahan as head coach has all pointed towards just Malik Neighbors. You just can't get away from it. There's just nothing that you could do to get away from the Malik Neighbors. It is their guy. So that will do it for us. Football and Other F-Words. We'll have a great show for you guys next week. We'll put this on YouTube when this is all said and done, because the YouTube servers are down. We have a warning. It's been down for now an hour, according to StreamYard. So it's not our fault. It is YouTube and StreamYard's fault. So just make sure that if you guys want to watch this, if you're listening to podcasts and want to see our fancy graphics, make sure that you go to YouTube. Bluegrass Beverages are a sponsor for Stoney Keeley, Sobros Network, and StackingInbox.com. For Mike at Mike Herndon NFL and at Stoney Keeley on Twitter and X. PaulKarski.com is where you can read articles from me and Mike, but also you can go to stackinginbox.com and read articles from me and Stoney. For both those guys, my name is Zach. This has been Football and Other F-Words, and you have just been effed.